B-Pod Studios.
Hey, this is WWE Hall of Famer and Olympic gold medalist Kurt Angle, and you're listening to the Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley. Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
Mike Riley, I feel like the buzz of the week was around All Elite Wrestling and what is being deemed as a must-see parking lot fight between the Best Friends and Santana and Ortiz. Mike Riley, I know you're excited about this match, so tell me about your excitement and why you love this match.
Well, you know, I've been down on AEW. I was down on them after the All Out pay-per-view there a couple of weeks ago. And this might have been the big rebound that they need here after the Matt Hardy match and all that stuff. This match could have been on pay-per-view. That is how these guys really went all out. And it was just really like free television. So Ortiz on the engine, the broken glass thrown in here, you know, Trent's back is all bloodied up. It just was the match here. I see what they're doing now that we're 2 weeks away from the NXT pay-per-view, which was just announced, and they're having their Royal Rumble, which we'll touch on in a little bit. But I think this is a big push for a spike ratings for AEW. And everyone in this match worked their tails off. They really did. And you know what? It may have been the best out of, for you know, a Raw, SmackDown, Dynamite, all that, the best out of the ring match I've seen in a long time. That was on one of those shows, not pay-per-view. And they outdid themselves. So great job, AEW. And I want to see how the ratings ended up. I did not have a chance to take a look at it for that portion of the show. And we'll see how it carries over the next couple of weeks, too, because that was a tough dip after All Out.
I watched it. I saw blood. I saw violence.
Yep.
I hated it.
Really?
The moments or the spots didn't even seem close to safe. And for AEW, did we not learn anything from Matt Hardy? So instead of jumping off hydraulic platforms, we'll just jump off car roofs onto windshields, which based on the blood spilled, I'm not sure if they were gimmicked properly or not. We'll do a reverse pile driver through a wooden board that's on the back of a flatbed truck. That's not even close to safe. So we're just doing weekly ECW TV then. So we're back to 1997 where concussions don't matter and the safety of the wrestler is kind of important, but not really important. Violence to pop a rating, like this type of violence, bumps on the concrete, which you just saw a concussion a few weeks ago. So the story between Best Friends and Santana and Ortiz, they needed this on TV as a blow-off. I know the match has been massively hyped after the fact. I saw all of it. You know, you loved it. It's the best parking lot brawl. It's the best unique venue match on free TV that you've seen in a long time.
Yep.
This match didn't sing to me, and I'm concerned about AEW becoming massive hypocrites here, whereas Matt Hardy's health is important or it isn't important. I'm not sure, because in the moment, it wasn't important, but looking back, it was important, but now after this thing and this dangerous match, it's not important again. I'm confused as to where they stand. Are they just trying? Is Tony Khan trying to make it 1997? And just to be clear, I enjoyed the Kenny Omega and John Moxley match last November.
Yep.
And there were people who were outraged. They got fined by the commission over it.
State of Maryland.
I felt like that was a safer match than what we saw this week. I felt like the Stadium Stampede match on pay-per-view was a safer match than what we saw this week.
Yep. Yep.
And don't get me wrong, I enjoy an aggressive, violent type match.
Oh, I know you do.
But so quickly after the Matt Hardy injury, it just seems a little tone deaf.
Well,
unless, and I don't know this, This is just me thinking out loud.
Just talking. Yep.
The Matt Hardy concussion was a work. Now, I don't believe it was, but if Matt Hardy's character is going in a different direction, he needed something like that to change course or to reset him. Because Matt Hardy's resume shows he's into these work shoot type stories. And that's just me thinking out loud.
And I don't know if I'd made a a possibility about that too, with his wife tweeting out, you know, saying it was a concussion and, you know, they want you to buy what she's saying and so forth a couple of weeks ago when we had the show after the All Out pay-per-view. And the other thing too with Hardy there, you know, and the concussion with Tony Khan, like I said last week, he's an NFL owner. So if you're upset about that, I understand your frustration about, you know, the concussion protocols and everything, maybe a little too soon. But I think this was the perfect prescription for AEW to do a match like this, to get everyone all amped up for it, because they're going back. This was the first show in 4 weeks that they were going head-to-head with NXT. NXT was on the Tuesday night there for a little bit, and AEW, they had the NBA playoffs and everything going up with that issue. So this was a big spot for them here as we come into, now we're in the fall. And NXT, as I said, they have their pay-per-view coming up 2 weeks away. And the AEW won't be again till November. But I think this match was, I loved it. I was all in on it.
I didn't feel it. It didn't sing to me.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel safe to me. And,
it did not look safe. No, it did not.
And just it's so close to the Matt Hardy thing. Yeah. And that's what kind of rubs me the wrong way is Tony Khan is very outspoken about making sure that the safety of the wrestlers is first and foremost.
Yeah.
That didn't feel safe to me.
Right.
And but, I understand that they're trying to do unique and creative stuff, but a reverse pile driver through a wooden board on the flatbed of a truck. That's a safe spot. The Kenny Omega one-winged angel from the entryway of the Jags to the football team Jaguars Stadium seemed more safe than that spot in the back of a flatbed truck.
I didn't
like the match. I didn't feel the match. The match didn't emotionally invest me. Yep. And I just thought it looked very dangerous. And based on from where people were bleeding, it felt like cars weren't gimmicked properly for the safety of the performers.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I'm coming from. And trust me when I tell you, I enjoyed ECW.
Yeah.
I enjoy a good violent match, but
right.
It just comes across as a little hypocritical that you're doing those types of dangerous things live. Because somebody asked, like, oh, that was that all in one take? And Tony Khan is like, yep, it's live. It's real. It was one take. It was live.
Yeah, yeah.
So it just it bothered me. And I didn't like the match because I don't like those parking lot brawl matches. Like, no. I remember when they were in the PlayStation video game, they were terrible.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? In this COVID era, when people have to think outside the box and to get as much interest as possible, they did it for me, and they got my attention, so I was more than happy with it, and I loved everything about this match. I mean, yeah, there was no hiding behind it. There were not a lot of safe spots there. That's a fact. But I thought it executed great. The story was a little cheesy with the the baby faces getting revenge there, disrespecting the mother's truck, and she gets it at the end. But you know what? It worked, right? It worked. So
I will tell you the mom flipping off Santana and Ortiz as they were driving off and the show fades to black. I did laugh at that.
Yeah.
I did appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. Old lady driving a pickup truck.
Yeah. I mean, I did appreciate that, but
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Everything else, you can have it.
No, I hear you.
You can enjoy that type of match, Mike Riley. That's not...
Ball in, buddy.
Those types of matches are beneath me, sir.
Hey, to each his own.
And that's the thing about pro wrestling is what sings to me doesn't... Like, you like The Undertaker, and I think the Undertaker is overrated. By the way, before
I like FTR, and you don't like them.
Yeah, they're terrible. Yeah. By the way, before we go too further, and this is a little bit off our rundown... did you get a lot of feedback from our list show?
I did. And tweets and texts. I'm just going to tell you, the majority that I got, people like my list better.
So people liked your list better, which is good.
From what I was told. I mean, I don't know. They could be just saying that to my face. I don't know what they're saying behind my back, though. But they liked my list better.
Oh, no. I got a lot of feedback telling me that my list was terrible and nitpicking at my picks, which is fine. Yeah. But the feedback I got was they liked your list, but they liked my arguments better.
Well, I saw one guy tweet on that there with your argument that I kind of bowed down to a few things. I did see that. Well, listen, the other thing, you know, I'll just on the Sting one where you flagged me on that, one thing that I really didn't push on so much with Sting, and I don't want to open up another can of worms here, so it's not on the rundown, but Sting, I just really felt that WCW told us for years that he's the guy.
He's the franchise player.
Exactly. And they made him that dude there. So he deserved to be in that list. And, you know, I did hear the argument stuff on that. And then the more I thought about it, too, Daniel Bryan does not belong on there, Jimmy. I respect the fact that, you know, came back from the concussion. The more I thought about it, I'm like, no. Brock and CM Punk where I flagged it. And then Daniel Bryan, I don't like that in there. I'm sorry.
So I saw the New Age Insiders tweet about Daniel Bryan and the fact that Jason, I think he's still going by Jason Maltoff.
Yep. Great guy.
He's like, oh, I could name 20 people better than Daniel Bryan.
Okay. Is that what he said?
I'll look forward to that commentary.
He said, I mean, listen, I think Daniel Bryan is awesome. He's great. I just didn't like the fact of, you know, this short little window here where these other guys, hence The Undertaker, has been around 30 years. And he has been a torch carrier for the company when they needed him there. And even if he is not the champion, he's still right there at the top of the mountain as an interesting character, the WrestleMania streak, and he is a legend as it is. When people think WWE, Undertaker comes to mind. When they think WWE, Daniel Bryan does not.
My brother-in-law pushed back on Ric Flair and The Rock.
Did he really?
Oh, it was tremendous. Like, I got the text message, like, I'm outraged that The Rock and Ric Flair are on this list. And I'm like, wow. Oh, thank you. Oh, I love it. Like, the givens were pushed back on. Oh, that was tremendous. He's like, The Rock's window was too short, and Ric Flair didn't really have a great run from 90 on.
Yeah. I mean,
and the arguments are there. Like, I was so happy. I was so happy that the Givens got pushed back on.
He's partly right because 92 was a huge year for Ric Flair. That was huge. And it even 91.
It was so much. So Ric Flair's 92 was essentially one match. It was the Royal Rumble match.
Right.
Because he loses at WrestleMania that year. Yep. Then he gets it back on a live event. And then he loses it to Bret Hart like a month later.
Yeah, then he's out the door in January after the Royal Rumble.
So Ric Flair's first WWF run, a little overrated.
Well, yes, I was thinking too. It initially when you sent that,
and then when he goes back to WCW, it's lost to Hogan, lost to Hogan, retired by Hogan. Yep. And Ric Flair's best stuff is really when he's doing the commissioner thing, or he's a GM, or something part along owner. Those lines. Because and this is part of why I'm not a Shawn Michaels guy, is the WrestleMania match in Orlando, overrated. The finish was terrible. It was illogical.
Really? You didn't like that finish, huh?
Oh, I hated that finish. I had a I had about a 15-minute debate in the aftermath of that match with Dale, who I used to work with. So I remember having this debate about what a beautiful match it was, what a beautiful ending. And my whole point at the time, and continues to be, it's illogical. If he's fighting for his career, why is he looking at Sean right in the face with his hands up, and he does nothing when the super kick is coming right for him? Doesn't put his hands up, doesn't duck out of the way, nothing. He lets it happen. Like, if somebody's coming at you and you're fighting for your career, don't you do something?
Yeah,
like, it's just illogical.
No, that's fair. Fair point.
And I didn't think the match was that good either.
Yeah, so I'm with you there. I don't think the match was super great either. It was just a storytelling.
Undertaker Edge was better on that show.
It was. And that was the championship match right afterwards.
The Money in the Bank match was better on that show.
Right, right. And I thought that WrestleMania was okay. It was all right. But the Flair finish there on the Shawn Michaels, the whole point was just to get him retired. So even if he did try to fight back or whatever, he had cashed out. He was done. Following night on Raw, he's bawling his eyes out with everyone around the ring. And they're all out there saying goodbye, Rick. And then, of course, he comes back.
But that was fabulous. The Raw after was great. Like, that, those type of ceremonies are tremendous.
Yep.
But the match itself and the finish of the match,
it was all
didn't
about storytelling.
Make logical sense, because he Ric Flair at the time was told, like, hey, back in November, if you lose one more match, like, you're done.
Yeah, well, it was all storytelling just to get him retired and to have that emotional send-off there on Raw. That's all it was. That's all it was. And then, you know, sure as hell enough, he goes to
TNA.
TNA, yeah, exactly. Yeah, has a little run there. And you just know when these guys say they're retired, they're going to come back. They have the bug. And that's why
Foley was retired, and then he went to TNA, and he was the Impact champion.
And
he didn't want to be retired, and then he got medically disqualified.
Right, and The Undertaker, I think you may see one more match out of him. I'm not ruling that out, especially after.
Oh no, he's done. He talked to Jared Karabas.
I didn't hear the interview. I did not.
How could you love The Undertaker and not spend 30 minutes listening to?
Did not. It's on my list. It's on my list to do this week.
So
was it a good interview?
Jared Karabas asked him, did you do the documentary?
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
So that it would be out there and it would force you to stay retired. And he essentially said yes. Okay. And Undertaker said to Karabas, that's the best question I've ever been asked.
Nice. Nice. Good job, Jared. Good job.
Yeah, I mean, Karabas is tremendous.
I'll have to text Jared and say good job after I listen to it.
Yeah, you should listen to it. It's The Undertaker. Even I took time to listen to it. And I think The Undertaker is overrated.
Well, I'm going to put it on this week at when I do have a chance to do it. So, excellent.
What I did like about the show...
Yes.
Was MJF, who got screwed by Moxley in the world title fight, comes back, beats a job guy in 30 seconds, and then bitches about how he should be the undefeated world champion.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was an effective way to get him another win, quickly as it was, but get him more mic time and get him bitching.
Yep.
And quite frankly, I'd rather see another match with MJF and Moxley rather than Lance Archer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and the whole Jake Roberts Taz fighting over the Lance Archer, like, do Lance Archer on your own time. Like, terrible choice for the anniversary show. And if he wins, like, please. I'd much rather have MJF. There are so many more people I'd rather have than Lance Archer as the world champion.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm going to do something big. I'd rather have Cody do something dastardly and get into that match somehow and cheat and win the title.
But
like that would be so much more interesting to me, Mike.
No, I know. It'll be good storytelling. I think that would be good. But the other thing with Lance, so I see their point here. They're trying to make him that ultimate heel with Jake the Snake Roberts in the corner, screw over Moxley or something, and the Taz situation, tie him in somehow. It's storytelling to make him the maybe one of the heel 1A behind MJF right there in the company, I'd say. try to put him back there. Because when he came in, when Jake Roberts came in, that was he had a big pop there. He's a huge.
Oh, Jake coming back and looking to troll Cody Rhodes was tremendous. It was great. Yeah.
So I think they and lost then, an appeal. They're trying to bring it back.
And then he's with Lance Archer, who's talented. Don't get me wrong, but when I think world champions, I don't think Lance Archer. Like, who is clamoring for Lance Archer to be the world champion? Like, okay, one match. Fine, no problem.
Right.
But no, like, I'm not feeling Lance Archer. So, like, who is advocating for Lance Archer? And it's obviously Tony Khan or Moxley or somebody. And it's like, don't make this guy the world champion. Don't do it.
Well, if you have Jake the Snake Roberts in your corner, I think they're riding off of that, too. Big name. And then, of course, what are we going back to the old common theme here of AEW, Jimmy? It's former WWE guys. So let's stick it to the WWE by having former guys atop our brand. John Moxley, Jake Roberts in the corner there. Now you're looking at FTR for the tag team division. Cody Rhodes, okay? I just think there's a common trend here where they're sticking it to Matt Hardy when he was right there, too. Brody Lee, all these guys. The list goes on. Rusev now. Go ahead. They're all coming back.
So, Yan, you mentioned FTR, and this is kind of my next point about stuff that I like about AEW and liked about this episode.
Yep. Other than Great opening match.
The Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, Hangman, the breaking up of the Elite. Mentioned this last episode. It has potential to be great.
Yeah.
The Young Bucks as being miserable, dirty pricks. When they're really at their best.
Yep.
Super kicking officials, throwing money at Tony Khan, the owner. Remember, the Young Bucks are the number one challengers for FTR. And if the story is the Bucks have to fight dirty to beat them, I'm in. Like, yep. I think that's awesome.
Sure.
Because remember when they had that tag match with Hangman Page and Kenny Omega back in February? Mm-hmm. Some say it's the greatest tag team match of all time. And I'll put it in my top 2, 3, 4, 5. Like it's definitely in the conversation.
Yep.
They were the bad guys. They were pushing. They were like Bret Hart. They were sneaky heels, sneaky bad guys, sneaky villains during the course of the match, trying to do what they could to win. Yeah. And so if they're just outright just cheating to win, oh, I love that. And you can play off it and say, well, the Bucks were too nice, and that's why they lost a Private Party last year in the tag tournaments. That's why they haven't been the top team, is that they've been distracted doing everything else. And now they're just here. They're miserable and they're just out to win now at all cost, which I think is the best version of the Young Bucks. And so like, I'm now looking forward to a tag team title match with them and FTR, whereas I wasn't as emotionally invested in it because I know everything that the Young Bucks do. I know everything that FTR does. And so now if you're telling me that the Bucks have a little bit of an edge, that interests me more because FTR should not have had a bad match with Kenny Omega and Adam Page. And that happened, but you know, the humidity, the weather, they couldn't handle it.
So just real quick, I want to touch on Kenny Omega in a second, but FTR here, I mean, I know you know that I'm all in on these guys, and I would love that and the Young Bucks. I think any wrestling fan would be in for a treat because FTR, those guys are the epitome of just kind of like old school for me. You know, you're with Tully Blanchard right there. They have that good look in the element there when they come across. They're real tag team division, traditional tag team. And I think that's what is working in AEW's favor here. And for the Young Bucks for a full year to put everyone over and now to come back pissed off to go after, and there you go, FTR, they are the champions right there. It's a perfect scenario for AEW right here. Young Bucks and FTR, bring it to me. Give it to me as a fan. I love it. Love it.
Yeah, FTR. So. I loved Tully and Arn. If you want a Tully and Arn match to watch, watch them work Strikeforce at WrestleMania 5. Watch them work Demolition.
No, I hear you.
Watch them work in the Midnight Express. I haven't felt that from FTR since.
Oh, no.
I think it was Orlando, NXT Orlando, when it was them against Ciampa and Gargano and AOP.
Well,
and if they had another match with Ciampa and Gargano, then I can't remember the timeline of it.
Yep.
Yeah. But that's the last time I was really invested in FTR. And if there might be an exception in there, but I think all their WWF Raw and SmackDown matches were terrible.
They were not good. They were booked so bad, but now they're being able to do what they want on the AEW here. And it brings me back to a time where you mentioned those WrestleMania 5 matches there, the old school guys, where now you can have the best tag teams in the world on your one promotion, AEW. And that's where WWE, they let that ship sail because their tag team division out on that right now.
But the thing is, Mike, is that the WWF tag team division is actually really good if they actually invested time
well
and effort into it, and
they don't do it,
and they put stories around it.
Yep.
You know, the Usos, and we'll get to Jey Uso in a minute. The Usos are just—they're a top tag
freaking
team of the last, you know, 6-7 years.
Yeah,
they've gone through all sorts of gimmick changes. They've had top-notch matches. Mm-hmm. So, like, one of the things we'll get to the Usos, but and maybe this is another topic discussion when. You know, there's a breather is that we do a list of our top 10 tag teams of all time, or top 10 tag teams since 1990 or 87 or whatever
year
you want to do it. But if the WWE really invested in their tag team division, they would probably blow AEW out of the water. But AEW is putting time and effort into trying to have a tag team division with the Lucha Brothers and the Lucha Brothers, who by the way might be the best tag team in the North American Union or whatever it's called now.
Yeah. How about Jurassic Express? What about those guys?
Express are good team.
You know,
Private Party is a good team.
Private Party's great.
Friends are fine. Santana and Ortiz are fine.
And for years, the tag team division in any promotion, for that matter. To be a tag team champion, it was probably the second best thing after the world title for years. I mean, now it's that you have a SmackDown, you have Raw. And if you weren't good enough to be the top dog as a champion, then as a singles champion, then you were able to work with a partner. And now that, I think, is what AEW is doing, and they're utilizing that to their advantage.
Well, one of the things is Chris Jericho is now going to work with Jake Hager in a tag team, which I like. And there's a point, we'll get to your Kenny Omega point, because I have a point on Kenny Omega as well.
Yep.
But since we're talking about the tag team things, I like the idea that Jericho is teaming with Jake Hager.
Yep.
Because it saves Jericho's bump card, and maybe it ends up in some type of Young Bucks versus Jericho and Jake Hager match, which I think should be really good.
Yep.
But the point on Jericho is, and he did an interview on the international version of the Inside the Ropes podcast, videocast. And he talked about how he talks with Tony Khan every day and how he's looking to make more stars now.
Yep.
And that's really Chris Jericho's role in AEW. Yep. He had the title run, and now it's who do we get up there? So he has the program with Orange Cassidy. He's going to do the team thing with Jake Hager. It's a loose comp. It's a very loose comp.
Yep.
But since Tony Khan wants AEW to be ECW in the worst way, Jericho is this version's Terry Funk.
That's a good way of putting it.
And it's a very loose comparison because Jericho has done more than Funk post Funk's ECW world title run. And when I say ECW world title run, I mean when he wins it at Barely Legal, which is ECW's really big marker, the Barely Legal pay-per-view. This small little can-do promotion is finally on pay-per-view, and Terry Funk wins the main event to be the world champion.
Mm-hmm.
So Jericho wins the AEW championship because they're going to network TV.
Yep.
And so Funk holds it for the summer. Jericho holds it through February, and then they kind of go in different directions where Terry's kind of around, but he also goes to the WWE as Chainsaw Charlie.
Yep.
But Jericho is hanging around to help younger talent. And maybe the comp is Terry Funk before he got to Barely Legal was helping younger talent like Sabu and Shane Douglas and that roster and Tommy Dreamer and putting those guys on the map, the Sandman doing stuff like that. It happened before he got his moment, whereas Jericho is doing it after he got his big moment with the world title, because Funk was the world champion before Barely Legal, but you know, for the sake of their ECW going more mainstream and getting more eyes on them, that Funk ECW title run, Barely Legal, was where I was going with it.
Sure.
So Jericho working with the younger talent is helpful. And Jericho is talking about how, like, I want to work with guys who I see something in. Mm-hmm. And he specifically sees something with Orange Cassidy, and he wants to do different things because
pretty similar
it's so
to
hard
John
to
Cena.
Do different. Yeah, John so, Cena was trying to, but the problem is once somebody left John Cena, it's like, now what?
Exactly. Right.
And that happened to so many people. Van Damme, Rusev. Right.
Even, I mean, Daniel Bryan had a good little run with them there for a little bit.
They had the one match at SummerSlam, which some consider the greatest SummerSlam match of all time.
I meant to say the good build up there. That's meant to say, yes, that was an awesome match. You know, AJ Styles and him, he put AJ Styles in the map. Roman Reigns, you know, not that Roman Reigns wasn't there, but he really officially thought that he passed the torch to Roman Reigns at that No Mercy pay-per-view a couple of years ago. It was No Mercy. It was the one in October or September. And then that's when Cena pretty much said, yeah, I'm going to Hollywood here on out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, stuff like that. That's the kind of guy Jericho is looking out for the best interest of the company and the in wrestling in general. So if you're a fan of pro wrestling, you better be a fan of Chris Jericho because he is the whole picture all around.
Perfect. So I'll picture. Let you lead with your Kenny Omega take.
Well, honestly, yeah, it's actually, to be honest with you, I really meant to say it was more of like a Hangman Page with the Kenny Omega storyline here. I thought it was really weak. Now, Kenny was on the commentary for the Hangman Page match on AEW this week. What I didn't like here, Jimmy, and I just didn't like, they made Hangman Page look real weak here, how Kenny leaves the commentary table right afterwards. And then Hangman goes chasing, looking for him after, you know, Kenny backstabbed him, I guess you could say, at the pay-per-view there. It just looked, Hangman looked real weak here, and I think this makes that match so much more important for Hangman Page to beat Kenny Omega, because if he doesn't, he may be just as irrelevant now. I mean, he's a great superstar. He's a great wrestler, great performer. But this match is so important for Hangman Page to beat Kenny Omega the way they're telling the story right now. But Kenny Omega, as we talked about, though, he may need the match more than ever before, though, too. So it's kind of a flip of the coin here. Who needs it more? For the future of Hangman Page, I think he may need it more because you were working with Kenny. But if Kenny ain't going to win, talk about an overrated superstar the last few years.
So I think in the immediate moments that Kenny Omega needs it more because Adam Page is 29 years old. Hangman Page is 29 years old. And Kenny Omega is 36, I think.
Yeah.
So Page has a little bit more time. And Page was in the first AEW main event, losing to Jericho. But what I think is most important for both Omega and Page is to get more verbal time on TNT, more verbal time on AEW, so that we know more about these characters. Because Kenny Omega's best promos were in the story with Jon Moxley, and that was a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're not doing Being the Elite on AEW TV, which is interesting and different. Yeah. And I'm not sure why there isn't more play there, but I don't know. So Kenny Omega being at the commentary desk during Paige's match should help Kenny be more verbal. And, you know, he definitely should accumulate more verbal skills than Jerry Lynn ever did.
Oh, without question.
So hopefully that helps. And Kenny Omega wrestles next week and Adam Page is on the desk and maybe he's drinking because when we had crowds, Adam Page being the drinker was getting over with the people.
I think a lot of that
was the people want Adam Page to get over.
Yep.
Because they see the talent and they like him. And I think that's just so important. So the Page Omega story, I assume, is going to conclude in November with them having a one-on-one match.
Yeah.
But it's Kenny Omega's time to shine. And they need to build that. And because if it's Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley in February, then they need that match. If it's Kenny Omega against somebody else, let me know who the somebody else is, and I'll tell you whether that can be a good match or not.
Right.
But Kenny Omega has a built-in story about losing to John Moxley, and he's on the chase to the world title, and I think he's still got the most wins in AEW, but I would advocate for a Cody versus Kenny Omega match, but as we know, they had a terrible match in New Orleans. Terrible.
Yeah, that was that was not the best.
You know, Jerry Lynn doesn't have a bad match with Cody Rhodes. Kenny Omega might have. And I blamed Cody for that at the time.
Yeah.
But now do I have to blame Kenny Omega?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know who to blame. Do I blame the promotion?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Common
trend. I gotta blame somebody because Kenny Omega and Cody should not have a bad match.
Common trend is Kenny Omega here. He's the issue.
But, you know, Cody has some clunkers, too.
Yeah, but do you remember them, though, or are we going to go down that road? Like, I think the Cody ones, at least he makes up for it right away, too.
It's possible. I don't I've bashed Cody enough.
I know you do.
The staple. You got to play the hits, right?
That's your M.O. Yeah.
So while I didn't love the main event of AEW this week, AEW does have some good potential for story trends as they head to their November pay-per-view. Just get rid of Lance Archer.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, I'm all in on that. The main event. I thought it was great. I like the violence aspect. So good spot for them.
Just unsafe.
Well, fair.
On the WWE side of things, Clash of Champions is taking place on Sunday, September 27th. It's McIntyre against Randy Orton in an ambulance match. It's Roman Reigns against Jey Uso for the Universal Championship. And then Nikki Cross and Bayley, I'm not really into because I don't think Nikki Cross is going to win. And the women's tag team titles, I'm not really into. I dig the Riot Squad. I dig Shayna Baszler and what they're trying to do with Shane and Nia Jax as the tag champions, but I'm just not feeling that match. And then Nakamura and Cesaro against the Lucha House Party will be a tremendous match, but I don't see the Lucha House Party winning the tag team titles. So those three matches, like, I'll watch and I'm sure they'll be wonderful, but they don't have my emotional investment. What does have my emotional investment, Mike Riley, is how WWE handles the Roman versus Jey Uso championship match. Jey won't win. Even if I can make the case that a Jey Uso upset is something no one would call, which is why it might be a great move. But the Usos for years have been a great tag team. So for Jey to get a world title match and win it would be a super reward for their hard work. One day I'll share a story or two why I love the Usos on a personal level, but I still think the plan is and the play should be for Roman to just beat the hell out of Jey Uso for as long as it takes to get people to understand that Roman's a villain and he's going to do whatever it takes to keep the Universal Championship.
Exactly. And, you know, family situation here, all storytelling, that's the perfect scenario for him to beat the crap out of his cousin and to get the opportunity for Jey Uso to have this match. And like yourself, Jimmy, personal interaction with the Usos, just really good guys. And this is a prime opportunity for Jey Uso here. But why are they teaming up together a week before a pay-per-view? I have a question.
Because that's traditional WWE booking.
Hate it.
They put them together in the same match. They see if they can get along. And then I bet what happens on Friday night, Mike, is there's dissension.
Yeah.
There's some sort of dissension where they miss a double team move. And then it's like, ooh.
Yeah. No, it's and the other thing, like, I kind of feel like the Usos for a while were, I mean, they're a great tag team, and they still are when Jimmy's healthy, but it kind of felt like a tag team purgatory, if you will. Never really.
That's no penitentiary to you, Mike Riley.
Well, this is true, too, yes. However, this is the WWE's way of booking the tag teams and telling the story around them, but I think it would be much more important, and sure, Paul Heyman is fantastic on the microphone, the storytelling aspect here, but give Jey Uso a little bit more mic time. Give him a little bit more mic time here. Those guys are great on the microphone in general. And I think that's really important here as you're going into a championship match, let alone against your cousin And a guy that was the, you know, still is a face of the company, but for years they tell you he is the ultimate baby face, the modern day version of Hulk Hogan, if you will, and then he turns just like that. Let Jey Uso tell his story a little more, and they're not letting him get on the microphone as much as I'd like to see that for a proper build-up here for a championship match ahead of the pay-per-view.
I think that they've kept it simple, and the Uso promos are great, but maybe they're purposely keeping it simple, and the whole less is more. So you have the in-ring Heyman Roman stuff, then you have the backstage, him kind of questioning, him being Jey Uso kind of questioning, like, what's this Roman?
Yeah.
And then you have the, well, Roman put Jey Uso in a four-way match for a title shot, and right. now he's got the title shot, and it's to set up, it's to help somebody, help family get to a position, and then show that I'll help you get here, but you're not getting what's mine.
Right.
And right. I think that that's part of the story that they're telling. And it's a good one because it's going to get Roman to that next level where he's the villain. He's the main villain. And now he's just about business as opposed to before he was about the fans and doing everything right. And now he's controlling the narrative. And this is my title. This is my brand. And I don't care if you're family, you're not getting my title from me. The title I never lost, the title that I'm supposed to have for as long as I want to, because it is in my genetics. I am born to be great. And you know who thinks I'm born to be great? Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
Paul Heyman is advocating for me and executing what I want done.
I mean, it's a great storytelling story here. It's perfect. Family and just have him beat the crap out of him. So to tell that story here, the dominance of Roman Reigns, there is no chance in hell that Jey Uso wins this match. I'm with you. In fact, if someone thinks Jey Uso is going to win this match, please come forward now, please. Because I don't think there's a soul in the universe that thinks he will win this match.
I'd love to see it, though.
Watch him win. He probably will now, knowing
this. I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it just because it would be unique.
Right. No, it would be awesome.
And because, you know, and I love Roman, too. Like, I love the Usos. I love Roman on both professional and personal levels, because I think they're great people.
Yeah, they're awesome.
So the other thing that interests me, Mike Riley, is Randy Orton going to win his 14th championship?
Well,
it's an ambulance match.
Mm-hmm.
So McIntyre's not going to get pinned here. Orton's not going to get pinned here. Are they going to do a title switch on an ambulance match?
Yeah,
I don't think so. But that greatest wrestler of all time for Randy Orton thing is still looming over his head and over his career in WWE. And so I'm wondering if they give him 14 and then he gets cashed in on. And this is the bigger play, because I'm kind of over Otis having the briefcase.
Yeah, it's getting old.
I always thought the play was Otis gives it to Mandy because he's madly in love and Mandy wants to use Otis to get what she wants, which is the women's championship.
Yep.
Now Mandy is on Raw and Otis is kind of being wasted with this briefcase. So Otis is in a feud with The Miz and John Morrison because The Miz looks down on Otis.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've done this advocate rant about The Miz being a world champion.
Yep.
I really want The Miz to get the case from Otis now. And I really want The Miz to go to Raw and cash in and be the WWE champion again. The Miz is a fabulous wrestler. He's a good promo. He's a good guy. And there can be some crossover with his TV show on USA. And I feel like The Miz should be given another shot as WWE champion. It makes so much sense to me. He's the model employee for them. Does everything he's asked, wrestles a safe style, is never hurt, good passionate promos. And you're seeing it again if you're watching Talking Smack, how passionate he is about this. And so like that to me is just, I find that more interesting right now than Randy Orton or Drew McIntyre.
So it's funny you said that with the Miz. If he were to cash in, you know, get it off of Otis, get the contract, and then cash in on Randy Orton, that would be history repeating itself.
Yep.
Because that happened 10 years ago on Randy Orton as well, right? Yep. So, you know, and there you go. So people forget that Miz, once upon a time, was the WWE champion, headlined to WrestleMania with the help of The Rock, defeating John Cena, which you consider the worst WrestleMania of all time.
It was. Atlanta was a terrible WrestleMania.
It wasn't good. I still think 11 was not that good. 9 was up there too. But yeah, that's a discussion for another day. But yes, The Miz does make sense, and that's a good. I like that that thought process there of that. He has that, you know, he can be a villain. He can be a babyface.
He can do anything you want, Mike. He's so versatile as a performer.
Right.
And the title is in jeopardy every night because we as fans, we think we can beat up The Miz.
Yeah, super talented guy all around. But
I almost made a mistake in calling him the Honky Tonk Man, but...
Oh, don't put those two in the same sentence, please. Oh, God. Cool, cocky, and bad. However...
But Honky Tonk's a jerk, so...
He is a cheap jabroni, too. He doesn't tip waitresses and waiters anywhere. Terrible. I got to tell you a story off the air sometime with...
I know the story. I know the story. It was garbage. From the Fan Fest, right?
Yeah, garbage. Yeah. A jackass. But anyways...
I blame you for that.
Oh, no, I had nothing to do with it. It was someone else. I saw it firsthand. I was not pleased.
No, I know the story, and you know, I'll make sure it's in my book.
Good man.
That no one will read.
Chapter 12. The Randy Orton, if he is to be the champion here, I very easily could see this happen. Why not give it the opportunity to have a ambulance match? So again, thinking outside the box here, they're pulling out all the stops. And if you're going to change the title, now's the time to do it without your crowd. Thunderdome, awesome, but without an actual reaction right there, I say go ahead, do it. And listen, I love Drew McIntyre. I think he's fantastic. But if you want to change it up a little, put a little more pep in the step or surprise everyone, maybe get some more ratings, go ahead, do it. Maybe get more of an interest level here to see how things go. Because I will tell you this, the Raw ratings, I did see this compared to last year, with the week one of the NFL, week one of the NFL Raw dropped 15% last year. They only dropped 2% this year. So it's not bad. It's a lot better. But in this pandemic world we live in right now, think outside the box, ambulance match, change the title. I'm all for it.
Yeah, I don't want them to take it off McIntyre. I think there's, I'd be more interested in a McIntyre Miz story. But I don't want them to take the title off of McIntyre unless it means something, because McIntyre's done everything right.
Oh, he's great.
And he's still moving merchandise. So the people are there for him, at least monetarily. And I think that that's very important.
Yeah.
So again, I'm not advocating taking the title off. I'm just trying to think of creative stuff to do with the WWE championship. And, you know, I'm a Miz guy.
It's fair. Yeah.
Ironically enough, I call that Atlanta WrestleMania the worst WrestleMania of all time. But that Miz intro made me a Miz fan.
Uh-huh.
Because the character clicked with me.
Yeah.
And so that's what made me a Miz fan, was that intro and really like his backstory about being a fan and coming up from the ground up. I should have been on board with that a lot earlier and a lot sooner than I was.
Yeah.
And I wasn't, and that's on me.
A Cleveland fan.
Well, you know, I mean, as long as it's the Indians, we're fine, but I know he's a Browns fan and a Cavs fan and all that stuff. But
yeah, no, he's from there.
He's born there.
It's choice. Yeah. So
not living there anymore, but he was born there.
Oh, that's right.
I know you had some thoughts on the 3-way Intercontinental Championship ladder match between AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, and Sami Zayn.
Yeah, and actually, you know, from that SmackDown a couple of weeks ago, I really was all in on the whole the match there for the feud of the three-way. And what I did not like, though, this past week on SmackDown was AJ Styles. And trust me, I love AJ Styles, but I don't think it was good for the character and the story here of Sami Zayn losing to AJ Styles, because he comes back and people forget about Sami Zayn because we had that Intercontinental tournament and so forth. And here he is. Didn't lose. I never lost my title here. But he right away, he loses to AJ Styles. I think that was a really bad spot, bad call by WWE to do that. And they should have had Sami Zayn win to tell a better story, what they're trying to tell us here, that he indeed never did lose. And I think he would be the favorite going into that match next week. I would have picked Sami Zayn to win back the title next week if he didn't lose to AJ Styles this past week on SmackDown. But now I think Jeff Hardy might retain the damn thing.
So I think Sami Zayn losing on free TV is an indication that he's going to win.
You do.
Title. Yeah, okay. I do. Cause that's how they book it. That's how in their mind. I wouldn't have had Sammy wrestle, but I understand that he needed to get some kinks out and to get some ring rust, and why not get a match with AJ in there?
Right.
But I wouldn't have had Sammy wrestle at all until he got into the ring, and then I would have had him win the match, and I would have had him do something really dirty to win the match. Maybe fake an injury and then come out late in the match and win it. I think Sami Zayn is a tremendous promo. He's a tremendous performer. And I enjoy him being on the villain side of things. Well, and him barking at production people because he's not being called the Intercontinental Champion when he never lost the title.
Right, right. And that's that would be good storytelling right there. So he never lost. So there you go. But he did give it up, though. And I think that's where they dropped the ball. But you know what? He might actually pull this off. But I don't know. I don't think they're going to do it. They'll give it back to him. We'll see.
Do you remember who he beat for the Intercontinental Championship?
Braun Strowman?
It was Braun Strowman.
Yeah. Okay. Braun Strowman. Can you believe that was earlier this year? Holy cow.
It's been a long time. It's been a long time.
Unbelievable.
It's been a long few months.
Yeah, really has. Yes. I got one more thought on the Clash of Champions match.
Sure, by all means.
Nikki Cross.
I'm looking forward to the ladder match. I think it'll be match of the night.
Ladder match, yes. Bring it.
Ladder match.
Yep.
For those three guys, match of the night, no question.
Yep, yep. Nikki Cross and Bayley. And the return of Sasha Banks this week.
Yep.
And, here it is. So she's going to interfere somehow. She's going to come back out there and screw Bayley over. My money's on Nikki Cross here, Jimmy. I think she becomes the new SmackDown Women's Champion. And that gives you so many different parallels here. Obviously, for Sasha coming back, interfering with Bayley, that match was inevitable for the Hell in the Cell we talked about. But now you just have a personal fight right there with no title on the line, those two going at it. And then more storytelling down the line if one of them is to get the championship back on their waist, they can go at it in front of a crowd at the Royal Rumble or SummerSlam or WrestleMania. Hopefully we have all that in place. But I think that Nikki Cross will be the new SmackDown Women's Champion. So Sasha and Bayley can have their feud without the title there. It's all personal here on out. And then, you know what? Nikki and Alexa Bliss have a little fun with it. You could see part two, Bayley, Sasha down the line with those two. Nikki and Alexa, more great storytelling.
So I would love, I'm a huge Nikki Cross fan. You know this.
Yes.
I dig Crazy Chicks.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. Yep.
And that's the old AJ Lee character, which I've been a huge Nikki Cross fan for a long time. I think her work is just so good, so solid. It's such a unique character to the women's division. And that's why I think the women's division has been so good, is because everybody's unique and not cookie cutter. And because I think Vince doesn't have a lot of hands in that cookie jar, so to speak. So I would love a Nikki Cross win. I don't see it happening. Here's why. After Clash of Champions is Hell in a Cell. This Bayley Sasha Banks story has been building for how many years now?
2.5.
It was really, at least on the Raw SmackDown side of things, it was since WrestleMania New Orleans a little bit before then. And I think it was Bayley throughout Sasha Banks in the Battle Royal that Naomi ended up winning.
Yep.
And then it just got kind of pushed around, and then they're a team, and they had a great summer run together as a team.
Yep.
But I think that Sasha and Bayley really want to do a Hell in a Cell match. And what we still haven't seen is Sasha Banks successfully defend a women's championship, a singles championship.
Okay.
So you have Bayley and Sasha, Hell in a Cell. It's a match that they've wanted to do. I'm sure they've wanted to do.
Oh, yeah.
For the title. And now it's Sasha Banks who knocks Bayley off. And then Sasha can have the claim of, I was in Hell in a Cell with Charlotte. I was in Hell in a Cell with Becky. And now I finally won a Hell in a Cell against Bayley.
So to your point with Sasha defending the title,
she needs to win the title over Bayley and Hell in a Cell and then successfully defend it. And they can hype it up as like, this is the first time that's actually happened. Sure. And now Sasha can have a run with the title.
So I think that's why you go with Nikki winning the SmackDown title. She has a little run with it, maybe for a month. Sasha and Bayley go at it at Hell in a Cell, and they just have their personal match, no title. Maybe Sasha gets the title off of Nikki at the Rumble, or Bayley gets it at the Rumble off of her, and then that sets up Sasha and Bayley at WrestleMania. To Sasha then beating Bayley.
I think that the Nikki Cross Alexa Bliss story is going to end
out.
No, I think it's going to involve The Fiend and Strowman, and I think that that's its own separate story that doesn't need the title. Yeah. And Sasha and Bayley, I think the title makes the feud more important.
Well, I'm in agreement with you there.
If you look at their run together, the Bayley-Sasha run together, Sasha at different points in times is staring darts at that title, at the SmackDown women's title, like she wants it. And Bayley explained that, I essentially used you and turned on you before you could turn on me.
Right. But
which I told you was going to happen, by the way.
Yes.
You're welcome.
But you're right. But the other thing, though, is that if they are to have that for storytelling purposes, I like the chase of Sasha getting that shot again, like to really go for the title. If she is to get it off of Nikki Cross, or if Bayley gets it off of Nikki Cross, then she gets it off of Bayley down the line. That is a true chase right there, where the Hell in the Cell, it would be brutal, it'd be a great match, but it's personal. And I get what you're saying, that the title does make it more sexier. I'm not disagreeing with you there. But on the flip coin, you may not even need the title on the line for those two, because they're going to give you a great match, especially with the Hell in the Cell.
I just think it adds stakes to it. It adds stakes to it. And Nikki Cross, who I love, I don't think that Vince sees her as the SmackDown Women's Champion.
Mm. Well,
in the same way that he doesn't see a lot of people as the WWE Champion, or like Otis. I don't see Otis as ever being the WWE Champion for a longer period of time.
Maybe
it just doesn't fit what Vince promotes as his champion. So
yeah, maybe a New York minute. That might be it. But long story short, like back to my point, I think this is the time to do it right now. Take a chance on anything during these crazy COVID times.
So hopefully we're getting out of that. And
yes,
they had a chance to do different things. And I think the best thing that's come out of this is them doing the Thunderdome. Cause it just,
it
presentation wise, it can just do so much more.
Right.
So good for them for, taking long enough to figure it out, but you got to build the set. There are all these little details that we generally don't care about, but it takes time to do all this stuff.
Absolutely.
One thing as we wrap up the show here, that I do want to touch on is NXT is doing a modified Royal Rumble match.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a Gauntlet Eliminator. And the winner of this match, which I'll explain to you the rules in a second, gets a crack at Finn Balor's NXT Championship at NXT TakeOver October 4th. Here are the rules. Two wrestlers start. Every 4 minutes, another wrestler enters. The only way to be eliminated is pinfall or submission. Last man standing will be the number one contender for the NXT Championship and will take on Balor at TakeOver.
Yep.
I saw that some of the names have come out. I haven't like looked at who the names are, but I see them coming out. I'd rather this just be a surprise because I'd love to see somebody from Raw or SmackDown come in so that they can have a match with Balor. And I thought of Daniel Bryan.
Okay.
Because I don't know that that pops a TV rating, but as far as a tremendous matchup, Finn Balor versus Daniel Bryan, can it get better than that?
Yeah. That's
like you have just two pros. They work an aggressive style. It's for the NXT championship. And it just makes me think of the Daniel Bryan Adam Cole match, which came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So for Balor and Bryan, you'd have a little bit of a build for it. And I'm all in on this, like, because it's my idea. But just because we haven't seen Daniel Bryan in a while. I know he had his wife had the second kid and he's home. But it's just something that I think would come out of nowhere because he hasn't been on TV for a while. It just makes sense to me.
Well, the other thing, too, it's funny you said that with the Daniel Bryan thing, because I'm not ruling him out to be the, what is that faction? Redemption, right? In the mask situation.
Retribution.
Retribution. Excuse me, not redemption. Yeah, thank you. Retribution. I'm really not into them anymore. I think it's getting old. But I think Daniel Bryan would be a perfect guy right there. I thought it was going to possibly be Roman. Obviously, that's not the case now. But I think that's where I'm not going to rule out Daniel Bryan for Retribution right here. However, that is a great match right there. Two perfectly matched guys, Finn Balor and Daniel Bryan. Pretty sexy, if you ask me. A sexy match just to have. Two evenly matched guys right there would be perfect. But when you look at, you know, the guys coming out for the Royal Rumble of NXT here in the pay-per-view, you got to wonder, is it going to be someone that they're trying to see for the future and then have Finn Balor put them over? That could be the other way they're going here as well.
I don't think that title is coming off of Balor anytime soon. Or maybe it's Adam Cole who wins it and gets another crack at Balor, and then that wraps up their story because Cole won the first one back in December, and then Balor won the most recent one.
Right.
And but this is the rubber match.
But whoever does win, you know, at least you have a little feud there with Balor, and he gives you a good little opportunity to make a run at it, and then he could have the squash essentially to win.
But I'm advocating for Daniel Bryan being a surprise opponent here.
I think that'd be good. Be great. And, great television.
And my runner-up, because it would rekindle a feud that I really enjoyed, Samoa Joe.
So, you know what? Did you see the WrestleVotes tweet this week about someone that wants out of WWE?
Yeah, it was very vague, and there are a lot of people who want out of WWE.
Well, yeah, but he was at the top of my list. Samoa Joe, I think that might be the guy. They're wasting him. I don't know. I think
an opinion. I don't know anything.
Yep.
I think Joe wants to work. I don't think they want him to work.
And that's my point.
But I think Joe's smart enough that if he has a voice at the Raw desk, he has a lot more years as a WWE employee.
Kind of like what they did with the Macho Man.
I do know that Joe worked really hard to get to that point. To be in WWE because it was a thing that he wanted.
Yep.
Because he was working.
That was a great show.
We were at the Lowell Spinners ballpark.
Yep.
The last and it park. Was Joe's last independent match before he was going to NXT.
Yep.
And I believe he took a lesser deal to go to NXT just because he wanted to get his foot in the door. Mm-hmm. And it didn't lead to him being WWE champion. But it led him to some main event programs against AJ Styles and Brock Lesnar.
Yep.
And everything that he did was good, solid stuff.
Yep.
Like that Brock program, like who stood up to Brock like Samoa Joe did? Nobody.
No one.
And Samoa Joe was a fabulous staple in NXT.
Yep.
The program with Balor, getting Nakamura ready, all that stuff. And Joe's just a first-class person.
Yes, he is.
And you know, the upset. You were there, Mike. The upset
Finn Balor.
Over Finn Balor and Lowell.
Yep, it was awesome.
Yep. You know, and he beats Kurt Angle show. In Lowell.
On a house show.
Yep.
You know, yeah, and winning the title right there. I just think that, you know, to your point of him being on the microphone and so forth and a longer-term deal with the WWE, that's kind of like the same mindset they had for the Macho Man back in the day, where they thought he had the creative mindset to work behind the scenes. He wanted to get back in the ring. And I think there's a parallel there where Joe wants to get back in the ring and he wants out. So I get what you're saying. It would make sense to put him back in there in NXT. It's a great opportunity, but does he want to have that over his head there? Like, oh boy, I got to bow down to this and do all that. I want to have my own creative process. So Vince McMahon knows that there's a company that would gladly take him, and they know, or he, I'm sure he has an idea that they would work wonders with Samoa Joe.
But so let's play this out, Mike. Yeah. Samoa Joe leaves, right?
Yep.
He goes to AEW, we assume, right?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yep.
Taz can be his manager again because Taz was his manager in Impact, TNA.
Mm-hmm.
Or is Joe on his own? And if Joe isn't in a main event, then what's the purpose of having Samoa Joe? Because AEW's roster is getting heavy.
Yeah.
And I know that they have AEW Dark on YouTube, but I'd have to look at their viewer count, but I don't go out of, like, if I know that Penelope Ford's working that show, or if I know that Taz is cutting a promo, or if there are certain like little details on there,
yep,
then I'll go watch it. But I don't go out of my way to watch it like Tuesday night or Friday night or whatever it is.
Right.
But I think they're also, they're hoarding talent. Hoarding talent's the wrong term, but they're getting more talent because I think they're going to have a second show soon.
Yeah.
And it might be 6:05 on Saturday nights.
The old-fashioned WCW route there.
And that's just a guess. I don't know anything, but...
But if he's going to go there, you could have Taz bring him in and then have him go right for the title. But I don't know. It's just for creative process and frustration of the character there in the company, he could very easily make the move to AEW.
But I'd be so much more into a Jon Moxley Samoa Joe match than...
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Lance
be great.
Archer. Get out of here with your Lance Archer crap.
yeah.
That, what do you got, Mike?
Oh, just
one more thing before we close.
One more note, just an observation. Did you see anything with WrestleMania 37 coming up? I meant to bring this up to you before, but I saw the Staples Center. Did you hear what happened?
No.
Okay, so obviously WWE WrestleMania 37 supposed to take place in Los Angeles this upcoming March, and WWE has they have said, I don't think publicly, but indicated that they're going to make a decision by December if it's still going to be on or off for LA, obviously because of the California restrictions. Well, the Staples Center was going to be the home, of course, for SmackDown the Friday before, NXT TakeOver the night before WrestleMania, and then, of course, Monday Night Raw the following Monday, right after WrestleMania. Staples Center, this week, apparently, booked two concerts during the weekend of WrestleMania 37. That would be Friday, March 26th, and Saturday, March 27th. The concert, Grupo Firme, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Just kind of interesting to keep an eye out here. If that's the case for that, you got to think that obviously WWE has, you know, something in the works for a backup plan, and I think all indications would be Tampa after being robbed of it this year. But the other thing is that maybe with the concert, you can kind of, I don't know, group it out a little more. We're wrestling. They think they'd be on top of each other, so they might have just thrown that out there. But again, it's all going to come down to a government decision for state by state. But I wouldn't be shocked if they make the move here out of Los Angeles, and we'll know by the end of this year.
Well, so a few things jump to mind on that. One is Tampa, because it's in Florida, might be in play, right? And they can do everything outdoors in Tampa.
Yep.
So they can run SmackDown outdoors, they can run, and they can do it in front of fans because Florida is...
They're doing their own thing.
Anything goes in the dungeon. and with... And maybe that's the same thing for California, is that they can run. It's the new Rams Raider. It's the new.
SoFi.
Yeah. It's the new stadium there. It's the new football stadium there. And they and they're just going to run everything outdoors.
Good. Didn't think about that.
But it's also, and I hesitate in saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway, because everything turns into something political. California is not a Trump state.
That's pretty true. However,
right? although we'll see, because maybe everybody in California is kind of fed up with how that's going and being locked down and everything, and maybe California becomes a battleground state now, which who would have thought that, you know, 6-9 months ago. But the point is that Vince has a relationship with Trump.
Oh yeah.
And that's why he paid $18 million to make his business mandatory, which Tony Khan should still be thanking him for.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe because of the McMahon-Trump relationship, California no longer wants to have WrestleMania because Nancy Pelosi might be the president. Who knows?
Oh, God.
Because of the way that the system could work if there's a delay in elections.
Oh, dear Lord.
Votes, please. And all this stuff. There's a chance that the Speaker of the House, if she's reelected, she could be the president. There's a whole chain of command.
Yep.
And she mentioned it a few weeks ago. She's like, well, there's the order that we have to go in, and which is essentially insinuating she could
she's
be the president.
She's number three.
Which, yeah. You know, if they stall and delay and whatever. Yep. Like, you can call Jerry Callahan and Howie Carr. And
yeah, do it on your own time.
You can do the political stuff there. But
yeah.
But there's a possibility that California doesn't want Vince because he's a Trump guy.
Right. And there you go. And that's the other thing right here. And look at all the revenue they lost this year. Tourism, people not traveling. Disneyland too. They're shut down. They were ready to reopen and boom, that's out. So a lot of that stuff. But this would be a big boot. I mean, it would help the economy. People all around the world coming in for WrestleMania in Southern California, one of the biggest hub spots in the world for tourism. So just something to keep in mind that I would not be shocked if Tampa is the home of 37 where we're supposed to be last year.
But if Vince needs to get a manicure pedicure, I'm sure Nancy has a nice place that she can open up, you know, to get her hair done and,
you know, and some ice cream for him too.
And some ice cream
from her kitchen. Yeah.
You know, because everything for her is safe, but you know, one set of rules for her, another set of rules for everybody else. Each week you can listen to the Political Talk Hour with Mike Riley. Each week you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Clash of Champions is next week, so I think we'll talk to you after Clash of Champions next week. Toodle.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.